Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 33, Activities of Kapila, Text 21.
Vanam pravajyate patya, apatya virahasura, jata tattvapyabhunashte, Vatse go eva vatsala, vanang pravajyate patya, apatya virahatura, jata tattva yabunaste, vatse go eva vatsala, Vanam pravajyate patya, apatya virahatura, jyata tattvapya bhunaste, vatse go eva vatsala.
Translation. Devahuti's husband had already left home and accepted the renounced order of life. And then her only son, Kapila, left home. Although she knew all the truths of life and death, and although her heart was cleansed of all dirt, she was very aggrieved at the loss of her son, just as a cow is affected when her calf dies. Purport. A woman whose husband is away from home or has taken the renounced order of life should not be very sorry, because she still has the presence of her husband's representative, her son. It is said in Vedic scriptures, Atmaiva Putro Jayate, the husband's body is represented by the son. Strictly speaking, a woman is never widowed if she has a grown son. Devahuti was not very much affected while Kapila Muni was there, but upon his departure, she was very afflicted. She grieved not because of her worldly relationship with Kardama Muni, but because of her sincere love for the personality of Godhead. The example given here is that Devahuti became just like a cow who has lost her calf. A cow bereft of her calf cries day and night. Similarly, Devahuti was aggrieved, and she always cried and requested her friends and relatives, "Please bring my son home so that I may live, otherwise I shall die." This intense affection for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although manifested as affection for one's son, is spiritually beneficial. Attachment for a material son obliges one to remain in material existence. But the same attachment, when transferred to the Supreme Lord, brings one elevation to the spiritual world in the association of the Lord. Every woman can qualify herself as much as Devahuti, and then can also have the Supreme Godhead as her son. If the Supreme Personality of Godhead can appear as the son of Devahuti, he can also appear as the son of any other woman, provided that woman is qualified. If one gets the Supreme Lord as a son, one can have the benefit of bringing up a nice son in this world, and at the same time get promotion to the spiritual world to become the face-to-face associate of the Personality of Godhead. Om Agyana Tirmidandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. The question was asked yesterday about affection in Krishna consciousness. Of course, all the relations between all devotees should be affectionate. Real affection is only possible when it's based on the service of the Lord. Otherwise, you'll find that material affection, although it looks attractive, is always fraught with pitfalls. And there's always some unexpected baggage along with the material affection. In other words, for material affection, there's always a price. It never comes free, and it never comes without reaction. What our heart is really longing for is affection that has no strings attached. Affection that is not restricted by time and space. Yesterday we spoke about how time and space spoil all our endeavors for pleasure and satisfaction, because everything in the material world is limited by time and space. So it is these limitations that causes our affection to become frustrated. First of all, the affection is within the context of time and space. And secondly, the affection always has strings attached to it. Expectations, prices that have to be paid. And because the affection is a material product and is manifesting in the material world, all sorts of pollutants are embedded within that affection. Indeed, the affection itself is a pollutant, because the affection is not directly for the soul. The affection is for the body and mind, which of course only have meaning because the soul is present in the body. But how do you show affection for the soul? How do you love the soul? That should be the question. Once you know how to love the soul directly, then you're doing the greatest service for the world. To love the soul directly means to help someone engage in Krishna's service. Help someone to become established and grow in Krishna consciousness. That is the direct love of the soul. And there's no love like that within the material world. As I've explained before, Krishna consciousness is the love religion. But first you have to find out what is real love and become qualified to love. Then you'll see that the true love, that love that's expressed in Krishna consciousness in relation to the service of the Lord, has no equal. It just goes on and on and on. There are no barriers to Krishna conscious love. It continues even after the demise of the material body. We can see that Srila Prabhupada has physically been gone for almost 30 years. Yet, his love is still nourishing devotees who feel his presence. So many grand disciples of Srila Prabhupada, they have dreams, loving dreams of Srila Prabhupada. And of course, his instructions bear his love through the ages, and through those instructions, there is the association. So, there's nothing like Krishna conscious love. As for the so-called affection and love of the material world, there's really nothing so special at all about it. It is a production of the modes of material nature. Passion. And then there's ignorance, because when the inevitable frustrations and disappointments come, you take shelter of intoxication and sleep to forget your problems. We should try to understand these things. Devahuti understood those things. She's a woman. Throughout the Bhagavatam, you'll see these great ladies always saying, "Oh, I'm a woman, how can I understand transcendental knowledge?" Yet they're understanding. But because they're humble, they speak like that. Queen Kunti would also say that. Krishna Muninam Amalatmanam, you're only known by the greatest munis, metaphysical scholars who are pure in heart. Tata Paramahansanam, Muninam Amalatmanam, Bhakti Yoga Vidhanartam. Katam Pashyema Histriya. You're known by the greatest metaphysical scholars. You're known by the Paramahansas, the swan-like persons, free from all material contamination. How can we women understand you? But she's seeing Krishna right there in front of her. She's understanding, she's seeing. But humility is always a major part of bhakti yoga. Devahuti is a rare soul, yet she's presenting herself in such a humble way. She knows the truth of life and death. Where are we going to go to get that kind of education? The truths of life and death. What polytech teaches that? What university teaches that? You don't find that anywhere. As I've explained before, the Krishna consciousness movement is doing two extraordinary things simultaneously. This has never been done before. It is teaching people how to become human beings and how to be transcendentalists at the same time. If you're actually a human being, you understand the truths of life and death. You understand how the spirit soul in the human body transits various phases of human life. You're not bewildered by all those phases. What are those phases? Birth, then growth, then some period of stability, then some reproduction, and then dwindling and death. When you make your lifetime plans for Krishna consciousness, when you make your Krishna conscious career plans, you must understand how you're going to transit these various phases of life. So you don't become bewildered by the illusions that each particular bodily phase presents itself. You know how when you're a little kid, you're basically foolish. You just want to play and you have no responsibilities. Your world is very small as a little kid. Then you become a teenager. Your hormones change and you become deranged. You don't know what to do with your body. That's basically the problem with teenage life. You do not know how to handle your body. It's a time of exploration and getting into a lot of trouble and doing things that may even affect your whole life, affect your health and your mental stability for the rest of your life. That's how ferocious teenage life is today, as so many of you can attest to. Then you get into your 20s. Still the partying phase may be there. The sense gratification explorations go on. And finally, late in your 20s, even up until your mid-30s, you develop some desire to experience the stability of a home. And so you look for a reliable partner amidst all the debris. And how can you find a reliable partner when everyone has already been completely made unreliable? By even yourself included. So you go wild since you were a teenager, and then in your late 20s or mid-30s, you decide to settle down with a responsible person. But how do you find a responsible person? Everyone, including yourself, has been devastated by so many illicit affairs. Do you think that suddenly, just because you want to live a stable, responsible home life, that a responsible man drops out of the sky? A responsible lady drops out of the sky? No. They've all been obliterated by sense gratification. So that means the people have to live with the reactions to their lust campaigns. What are those reactions? You can't find a decent person with any kind of integrity and honor and responsibility. What goes around comes around. An intelligent person understands this deadly cycle and realizes, I've got to get out of this cycle. I can't function caught up in this kind of mad river. Like the White River rafting is a great sport in New Zealand. So many tourists come for that. So people like to live their life like they're rafting on a White River. They don't know where they're going. They just set out in their raft on the mad rushing river. They have hopes, but so often these hopes are capsized. We have to teach people how to live with the fruits of their activities. They're going to reap what they sow. So if you live a chaotic teenage life and continue into your 20s, by the time you're in your 30s, your mind and body are completely depleted and there's no reliable partners for you because everyone spoiled everyone. The result of unrestricted sense gratification is that you become an animal. Animals have no honor. It's hard, though, without getting the superior taste of Krishna consciousness, to resist these impulses. When you're young, your senses are so fresh and strong and vibrant. They fascinate you. Your senses just fascinate you. They seem so full of energy. So, how much of your youth are you going to waste on exploration? Surrendering to your senses. You have no other choice unless you have superior knowledge of life. This is what Krishna consciousness is trying to give. Superior knowledge of how to go through the phases of life and not become capsized. Understand what is youth. Understand what the youthful experience is and how it presents to your mind so many possibilities. Understand the anchorings of your body and mind. Learn about it. Then understand the psychology of adult life. In your 30s and 40s, you want stability amidst a mad world, a world where there's economic and political upheaval. You want stability. A home that's rock solid, relationships that are rock solid. But that desire also is rarely fulfilled. And then you get older and your body begins to dwindle. Your senses weaken. By that time, you may realize that your whole life of economic and sense stimulation hasn't been worth it. But you don't tell anyone. You've had some kids. You have no idea how to educate your kids about life. You just tell them, follow your dream. Be happy in your own way. As long as you're happy, whatever. And then, by the time you're in your 40s or 50s, you've probably been divorced at least once, if you ever bothered to get married. And there's a few kids, somehow or other, happened. Regardless of the lack of stability in this world, ladies still like to have children. And so, you probably have one or at least one broken family, maybe two, maybe three. And so finally you get old, and you're just hoping that you'll be able to retire in peace in a little batch somewhere. Maybe you'll have a boat. That's it. Is that all there is to life? Is that all you can expect? And then, of course, you have to work very hard. Find a little job somewhere as a salesperson in a store. Or if you're a real achiever, you try for the corporate world. An executive, a corporate accountant, a lawyer. surrendering to the corporate machine, or you live your whole life trying to depend on the dole. Oh, will the dole still be here 10 or 20 years? So, is that all there is to life? Where is the education for dealing with the phases of life? How do you get what Devahuti had? She knew all the truths of life and death, and her heart was cleansed of all dirt. Where do you get that from? No one lives in this world, actually. This is a world of death, in case you haven't noticed. Everyone dies. There was one story, true story, one disciple of Srila Prabhupada. She was the daughter of a devotee who was also his disciple. And she was 16 or 17, and she was diagnosed with leukemia and given a short time to live. So her mother brought her to Vrindavan, and Srila Prabhupada happened to be there. And she was a teenage girl, of course, in very much anxiety. And so the mother explained to Srila Prabhupada that the daughter was really fearing that she would have to see the Yamadutas. And Prabhupada would just reply, don't worry, just chant Hare Krishna. But the girl was still worrying. Ladies have this tendency to become attached to worry and anxiety. Of course, you would say that she definitely has something to be worried about. She's going to give up her body. But everyone's going to give up their body. And that's the point Srila Prabhupada made to her, to make her sober. He looked at her and said, no one lives in this world. Do you understand? No one lives in this world. Everyone will die. This one will die today. That one will die tomorrow. That one will die next week. That one will die next month. Everyone dies. No one lives. So in this way, with just a few words, Srila Prabhupada just stripped away all the illusion that this is a world of life and meant for living. No, this is a world of death and meant for dying. People don't like to hear that, though. I don't know how many of you would have been attracted to Krishna consciousness if we told you the truth of what this world is meant for. It's a world of death. No, you're young and you want something to live for. That's fine. But real life is on the spiritual platform. In terms of living for the body, there's only death. Everyone dies. And most people don't know when their death will come. So this is the truth of life and death. How sober can you be about your own life so that you resist the call of Maya? When you're young, Maya's calling to your senses. Let your senses loose. Explore with your senses. Stimulate your senses. And then you get older as an adult, and then Maya calls you stability, secure income. Nice investments. Stability. Your house surrounded by land. Your car. A good car. Have two also. Be well established. So that's the adult attachment to material existence. Security, stability. Sense gratification, of course, but sense gratification within a secure, stable environment. Whereas when you're young, you want sense gratification, but you don't care whether there's security, stability or not. Just let it be wild, anytime, anywhere. Just the more unpredictable, the more exciting it is. When you're older, as an adult, Yes, the attachment to sense gratification is still there, but you want it within a stable, established context. Young people don't care about the context of sense gratification. The more insecure and unstable it is, the more exciting and volatile it seems. So, that's all that goes on as you change from teenage, young adult life to adult life. Simply the circumstances of your sense gratification change from wild, unpredictable, to stable and well-established, mature and sedate. Who is teaching people about the truth of life and death? Who is teaching people what you feel as a teenager, what you feel as a young adult, what you feel as an adult, so that you do not become attached and you waste, in that way you waste your valuable human form of life? Where do you go to get that kind of education? It's not being taught. And of course, who teaches how to cleanse the heart of dirt? How many people understand that it is the dirty things in the heart, the anarthas, that cause the problems in life? Where's the program for cleansing those dirty things in the heart? We're so fortunate to have the opportunity to serve Krishna. Never take devotional service as a drudgery. Oh, I got to do this in order to stay at the temple. I got to do this in order to get initiated and offload my karma on someone. I got to do this because they tell me to do it. No, never take devotional service in that way. Be always very thankful to Krishna for devotional service. How kind you are, my Lord, to give me this service, a chance to reclaim my lost spiritual identity and to give you pleasure. That is the attitude you should have about any devotional service. Even if it seems difficult. A difficult service means you have the opportunity to depend more on Krishna. The service challenges you. If you get such a service that challenges you to the core of your being, you should be thankful for that. Because you'll be forced to depend on Krishna more. If you have a service that's very easy for you to do, you may not depend on Krishna so much. You may never develop the need to depend on Krishna. But if you have a service that constantly makes you cry out to Krishna, that's good. Krishna has everything already, but he wants to see your dependence on him. And dependence on Krishna is easily developed when you have a service in which you know, without Krishna's empowerment, I can't do this. That's how to make rapid spiritual advancement. On the other hand, if you have service that is so closely matching your material propensities, you may become a bit comfortable. It's all me and my abilities. Just see what I have done for Krishna. I'm so expert in these things. So sometimes it is said that we should engage in Krishna's service according to our propensity. At the same time, it's also said that this Krishna conscious movement should always be a great challenge. You should have some service that causes you to depend on Krishna, knowing that unless Krishna blesses you, you can't do the service. So we keep both things in mind. Now, we've understood Devahuti's situation. Her husband, Kardamuni, has left home to take sannyas. And now her son, Kapila, has also left home. So she's grieving because of Kapila's departure. The example is given that as a cow is affected when her calf dies, the cow cries all night. Similarly, Devahuti was aggrieved out of affection for her son. But her son was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So her affection and her grief were not material. Her affection and grief were spiritual emotions. Lord Kapila Dev left her with instructions so she could go back to Godhead. And indeed, she was going to go to the same Vaikuntha planet as Kapila and be with him there. We find in Chaitanya Lila a beautiful example about Lord Chaitanya, who is known as Matri Bhakta, the best devotee of his mother. When Lord Chaitanya was at the house of Advaita Acharya in Shantipur, there was a great festival every day. During the day, devotees would discuss the science of Krishna, and in the evening, they would be chanting and dancing, feasting every day. So, Sachi Mata, she came from Navadvipa, and she was being carried in a palanquin. Respectable ladies, they're carried in a palanquin, and the curtains are closed so that passerbys don't see the face of a respectable lady. Ladies who want to be respectable should always act like exquisite diamonds. Like you go to a jewelry shop and you want to see their best diamonds, they don't generally have them on display. The jeweler has to go in the back and bring out these rare jewels. So that is how ladies should always be. The more exquisite in a private way that a lady behaves, the more beautiful she is. Whereas the tendency these days is to expose everything. Topless, bottomless, everyone gets a view. But that is garbage existence. So Sachi Mata, she came in a palanquin, and she saw Lord Chaitanya as a sannyasi for the first time. No hair. When Lord Chaitanya saw her, he immediately offered his dandavats to his mother. And she picked him up and she put him on her lap. And she's kissing his face. She's caressing his body. And she's crying, especially seeing he has no hair. And she tries to look at his face and study it, but her eyes are flowing with so many tears she can't see him clearly. And she pleads with him, "Oh, Nimai, don't do to me what your elder brother Vishwaroop did. Your elder brother Vishwaroop left home, he took sannyas, I never saw him again. Don't do that to me, please, don't do that." And Lord Chaitanya told her, "This body is not mine. This body is your property. This body came from you and you raised it. I cannot repay my debt to you for thousands of births." As long as I live, I cannot repay my debt to you, my mother. I shall never be indifferent to you. Whether knowingly or unknowingly, I've taken sannyas, but I'll never be indifferent to you. Mother Yashoda, Sachi Mata, she's Mother Yashoda in Krishna Lila. Sachi Mata, she stayed at the house of Advaita Acharya, and she cooked lunch for Lord Chaitanya every day. There came a time when other devotees wanted to make lunch for Lord Chaitanya. Srivas Thakur extended an invitation. But then Sachi Mata heard about it. And she said, "Look, think about my situation. My son has taken sannyas. I have to stay at home. I won't be able to see him anywhere. He's not going to come home because a sannyasi doesn't go home. You all will be able to wander and see him wherever you like. I can't. So at least while he's here, in the house of Advaitacharya, while we're both here, let me cook for him. So the devotees all said, yes, we accept whatever you've said as a Vedic injunction. We'll carry out your order. Then Lord Chaitanya heard about this. He wasn't very happy. He heard about his mother's eagerness to monopolize all the cooking for him. So he felt, this is a bit too much. Encirclement by relatives and family affection. So he called the devotees around him and said, do you remember that previously I wanted to go to Vrindavan, but you all obstructed me? Now, please think, what can be done about this? This is a hint. In Indian culture, you know, things are often expressed indirectly. So Lord Chaitanya, he presented the reality to the devotees. Do you remember I wanted to go to Vrindavan before? That's a hint that things are getting a little... he's getting a little fenced in by his mother's affection. What do you think? How can I go to Vrindavan now? Then at the same time, Lord Chaitanya said, I don't want to ever leave you all. So you please think of an arrangement by which I'll never leave you, but at the same time, I have to do what I have to do, and I can do it. You think about it. So the devotees went to Sachimata and told her what was going on, and she immediately understood. I'm being a bit powerful in my attachment for Nimai. She said, if Nimai would stay at home, I would be so happy. But then others would criticize him. What kind of sannyasi is this? Bound to the home, bound to his mother. And when that criticism comes, I would be so unhappy. My happiness is when Nimai is happy. That's all I know about happiness. This is real love, real affection. My happiness is when Lord Chaitanya is happy. Otherwise, I don't have any understanding of happiness. So, Mother Sachi concluded, I don't want my son to stay at home and be criticized as a false sannyasi. In this way, Srila Prabhupada explains, Mother Sachi was instructing all the mothers of the world that better they let their sons go and search for Krishna. That is the best affection. If the son stays at home, it may appear that the mother is happy, but actually that happiness is not the best thing for the son. For the son, the best thing is that he's allowed to go search for Krishna. By the son's going out and searching for Krishna, he gives credit to his mother. So, you can call mother Ma. But actually, that means Maya. A mother who doesn't let her son go search for Krishna is known as Ma. Maya. Sachimata didn't want to do that. She didn't want to restrict Lord Chaitanya's devotional activities. At the same time, she had this attachment. So then she came up with an idea with her spiritual intelligence. Here's a plan by which Lord Chaitanya can be away, yet he'll be close to me. Let him go stay in Jagannath Puri. Jagannath Puri and Navadvip are like two rooms in the same house. People are always coming and going between the two places. So I'll always be able to get news of Nimai in that way. Also, sometimes he may come to Navadvip to bathe in the Ganges. So in this way, Mother Sachi came up with this plan. And when Lord Chaitanya heard it, he accepted. and that solved the situation. He would be gone from home, but he would be in a place where his mother could always get news about him. And devotees going back and forth between Navadvipa and Jagannath Puri would bear the news to Sachimata. So, night after night, at the house of Advaitacharya, there'd be kirtans, ecstatic kirtans. Lord Chaitanya would be displaying ecstatic symptoms during the congregational chanting of the holy name. There would be huge feasts during the day and discussions of Krishna. Then Lord Chaitanya decided it was time to go. Time for him to start his travels. And what did he do before leaving? He offered his obeisances to his mother and he circumambulated her. And then he bid farewell to the devotees. And they were all stunned and crying. He's leaving, he's leaving. But Lord Chaitanya started off. In other words, he's demonstrating, when it's time to do your service for Krishna, you have to be neutral, you cannot be bound down. You cannot be bound by affection. You have to satisfy Krishna's senses. So he started off. But Advaitacharya was following him, crying. And Lord Chaitanya told him, you have to go back. If you can't maintain your stability, how can anyone else survive? Please return. So Advaitacharya did that. So we see from these leelas that in Krishna consciousness there is affection, but it's all based on the service to the Lord. The affection does not impede the service to the Lord. The affection increases the service to the Lord. That is real affection. There's no greater love you can show someone than helping someone to be Krishna conscious. For those who are reaching out to others with bhakti, they're the real lovers. Otherwise, what can you do about love in terms of the body and mind? You're grasping onto something that cannot be held onto. And you become frustrated, and then you take it out on the other person. Why don't you reciprocate with me properly? Why don't you understand me? Things just never seem to click, because it's not possible for things to click on the material platform. So then you compromise. All right, you may not be everything I wanted, and I'm not everything you wanted, but still, we have to gratify our senses. And we don't want to be alone, so until we really get disgusted with each other, we'll stick it out. After all, there are the children. And we have some debts to pay off. But even those motivations aren't keeping people together anymore. Now the people rationalize. I'm not happy with you, you're not happy with me. Yes, there are the children, but the children will benefit from our being honest. We can't stand each other anymore, and so we're not going to live together. That's the best thing we can teach our children, that they should just be honest about their own sense gratification. If it doesn't work, then drop it. That's how people rationalize things today. And therefore, the majority of families split. Now the fact is, those families were never based on real love and affection. Because how can there be real love and affection based on the body and mind, which is such transitory, insubstantial things? Sometimes people, they become afraid of Krishna consciousness. You have all these rules, you have all these ways of relating, the boys and girls aren't, plastered against each other. You know, what's going on? Where's the love? Sometimes people say that. People will even sometimes say, "That feels a bit unnatural at your centers, at your temples. I mean, I just don't see the natural exchanges going on between the men and the women. Strange." They don't understand what real love and affection is, and how bhakti yoga produces the true lovers. Even a little attempt to help someone be Krishna conscious is infinitely greater love than all the passions and expressions of temporary emotional and physical bonding. You teach someone to chant Hare Krishna. Sometimes I catch myself in talking to persons and I explain how you can start to chant Hare Krishna. Been saying the same thing for 32 years. Start out with one or two rounds a week, then increase by one or two rounds every week. Gradually you'll be chanting 16. So from the material point of view, I could ask myself, I've been saying this for 32 years. Did you get tired of this? No. On the spiritual platform, this is love. This is the greatest expression of love and care. To help someone to grow in Krishna consciousness. We never tire of that because we never tire of loving. So, to advance in Krishna consciousness, we need to change our conception of what is love based on humility. Humility means, I thought I knew what love is. Actually, I don't. Let Krishna teach me. Particularly in this age of Kali, let Lord Chaitanya teach me what is real love. He said, Yare deko, tare koho, Krishna upadesh. Wherever you go, whomever you meet, teach the science of Krishna. That is the activity of the lover. Feel for the suffering of the people in illusion. Feel the joy of their becoming Krishna conscious. When people get one of Srila Prabhupada's books, meditate on the joy that they're going to experience opening that book and starting to read it. This is how love is exchanged in Krishna consciousness. Distribute prasad to them. Think about the taste that someone gets when they take prasad, how there's no other food that can compare to prasad. When you chant and dance in the Nam Sankirtan, you're chanting and dancing in the storehouse, in the flood of love of God. So let us not become bewildered by our material senses and take our Krishna conscious activities in a very mechanical, rigid way. You may not see it now, but these activities are all based on exchanging love. Simply, you have to be patient and get through the illusion of bodily identification, bodily attachment, and mistaking that for love, mental exchanges on the mental platform, manodata, the chariot of the mind, racing here and there. And then two mental chariots approach each other and it doesn't work. It doesn't work at all. There's just the illusion that it's going to work. So, yes, Krishna consciousness is based completely on affection and love. Simply we have to allow ourselves a re-education in what is affection and love. Devahuti's attachment for her son was not material affection. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, she's feeling separation from him. Sakyamata's attachment for Lord Chaitanya was not material. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
All right. Any questions?
Yes. Yes. As I explained, real love is shown by trying to help someone to be Krishna conscious. And sometimes that love is appreciated and sometimes not. If you're going to preach Krishna consciousness, you must become accustomed to the fact that you're not always going to be appreciated. Your efforts are not always going to be recognized. I tell all devotees that who want to distribute Krishna consciousness, cultivate others, you have to be prepared for your efforts to not be recognized. To preach Krishna consciousness effectively, you basically wear your heart on your sleeve. As a preacher, you'll get the credit for Krishna and you'll also get the blame. Because when people want to reject Krishna consciousness, they blame Krishna. And because you are representing Krishna, they'll blame you. So you have to become ready for that. You mentioned about guru-disciple relationship. The spiritual master is taking the service and transferring it to Krishna. It's not simply that someone doing the service of spiritual master just gets all the nice Vyasa Puja offerings. No, you get the other stuff too. If someone gives up their Krishna consciousness, the spiritual master gets a reaction. It's like Krishna saying, you recommended this person to me and now look what this person is doing. So the spiritual master has to undergo some reaction. This is the sacrifice for preaching Krishna consciousness. It's not simply all ki jai. So you're sacrificing yourself. Without preaching, Krishna consciousness will not spread. But preaching means taking a risk. To extend yourself, that is real love. What does Lord Rishabhdev say in the fifth canto? Don't be in any position of responsibility for others unless you can save that person from the cycle of repeated birth and death. Don't do it. Don't be a guru, don't be a mother, father, don't even be a relative, don't be a teacher, unless you can save your dependents from the cycle of birth and death. So the spiritual master has a duty to the disciple to extricate that disciple from material existence. That determination has to be there, just like the mother has determination to give the best to her children. Similarly, the spiritual master has the determination to give the best to the disciple. To see that that disciple has the opportunity to push ahead in Krishna consciousness. To make sure that that disciple understands fully the importance of chanting the holy name and distributing the holy name. Otherwise, what is the use in accepting unqualified, not serious disciples? There's no point to that. Because the spiritual master works hard for the deliverance of the disciple, then the love is generated. That is real love. Srila Prabhupada always explained that it's a two-way street. It's not simply that the guru is making enthusiastic the disciple. But the disciple, by devotional service, dedicated devotional services, giving enthusiasm to the spiritual master. Based on the bond between the guru and the disciple feels honor bound to follow the regular principles and sacrifice for Krishna. Asking about compassion, and what specifically about compassion? Lord Chaitanya is in the spiritual world. He has his own neighborhood on Krishna Loka. Krishna also felt compassion when Mother Yashoda was getting fatigued in trying to bind him. We'll talk about that tonight. Anything else? Yes? First of all, dedication to attentive chanting of the holy name. You get that down and stick to it day after day, and you'll be okay. No matter what, stick to that. No matter how the Mitchell energy tries to make you feel, just stick to the attentive chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra every morning. And you stick to studying Srila Prabhupada's books, which explain all about the illusion and the spiritual world in such a powerful way. And always be active in serving Krishna. Always be active in serving the devotees. Those are the plans. That's the main plan. The other things are subordinate. What ashram you'll be in. Whether you shall be a brahmachari for life, or a brahmachari for 5 or 10 years, that kind of thing. When to become a grihastha, when not to become a grihastha. If you can understand the main career focus, which is chanting the holy name, serving Krishna, studying the science of Krishna, then you'll be able to traverse any of the other phases in life very easily. There are difficulties in this world. That's the nature of this world. But you can cross over them. You see, the Bhagavatam doesn't deny that there are difficulties in this world, but it says you'll cross over them, just like you can cross over, step over the water contained in a hoofprint of a calf. Normally, material existence is like an endless ocean of problems, but for the devotee, that ocean of problems shrinks to something you can easily step over. So understand the main career necessities, and then you'll easily deal with the subordinate career necessities. First things first. Develop your focus. Everyone should be trained to develop the focus on Krishna. And then we see about the subordinate things. But if you haven't learned about the focus on hearing and chanting and selfless service, then you won't be so strong for navigating the phases of life. And the subordinate issues will become paramount in your life. Whereas the paramount thing in your life should be, how am I going to hear the holy name? But sometimes devotees, they, due to lack of guidance, and often do not wanting guidance, they just become tired of trying to hear the holy name every morning. I've been doing that for 2, 3, 4 years. Come on, who can really hear the holy name? Read all the books one time, okay? I've associated with the devotees. I know them all their faults. Had fights with half of them. So. Be wary of that kind of vision. Don't let your Krishna consciousness descend to that platform. As we spoke yesterday, every day should be a sense of wonder. I can't believe it. I'm sitting here with the opportunity to chant Hare Krishna. I'm hearing Bhagavatam class in the presence of the deities. I can't believe this. This is a miracle. So first, understand the main career necessities, which are not what color will be my dhoti, or who's going to buy my saris for me. Those are not the career necessities of the first order. Anything else? Especially these days, young persons need to really chill out for a while because they've really obliterated themselves in their teenage years. They should really invest some solid time in Krishna consciousness, straightening themselves out before they try to expand their relations in terms of family development. Yeah. And if you at all feel indebted to your spiritual master, you should invest at least some years in full service to Lord Chaitanya's mission. At least some years. What's wrong with giving your youth for Lord Chaitanya's service? What are you going to do with your youth anyway? Whatever's left of it. After tons of ecstasy and, and countless random affairs, random interactions with the opposite sex. So whatever is left of your youthful energies after all that, what's wrong with using that for Lord Chaitanya? It'll do you no harm, it'll do the greatest good. We should not be so proud and puffed up. It's me. Can I see my way to doing a bit of service for Krishna? Maybe a year or two. My life is so important. I have so many extraordinary goals. I'm going to change the whole world. Can I spare some time for Lord Chaitanya? Have the humility to understand you're not very important at all. If anything, in the years before you came to Krishna consciousness, you simply made the world a worse place to live. Have the humility to understand that. You destroyed yourself and you destroyed the world too. But now you have an extraordinary opportunity. You take care of Krishna. Krishna will take care of you. I've seen that. Those devotees who have that kind of ethic. I'll take care of Krishna. Krishna takes care of them through even situations that seem so difficult, so excruciating. But by Krishna's grace, that devotee crosses over those difficulties. It's almost mystical. You don't know how it's happening. But because the devotee has been dedicated to looking out for Krishna's interests, Krishna is dedicated to looking out for that devotee's interests. And again, Krishna shows that. Sometimes you may think, oh, I'm finished. Oh, this has happened, that has happened. Oh, this world has its upsets. Oh. Krishna will still show you, yes, this world had its upsets, but I'm still here, and you're still going back to Godhead. When you get that kind of conviction, then you're ready for serious Krishna consciousness. If you're going to be a fair weather devotee, you're going to be very weak. We used to call them festival devotees. They used to come around whenever there's a festival. Fair weather devotee. When things are nice, you're ready to serve Krishna. But as soon as there's some inconvenience, some difficulty, then you give up. We want devotees who are all weather devotees. Understanding in a not sentimental way that this world is a place of upsets. But Krishna promises you, you'll cross over those upsets by my grace. So Krishna never says you're not going to be disturbances, upheavals. But he says, if you do things his way, you'll cross over all those obstacles. And that's the whole point. To cross over the obstacles. We never say they're not going to be obstacles. But we do say, if you do things Krishna's way, you'll cross over the obstacles. Anything else? You're raising your hand? Or, oh, you're sewing. Take, for example, family life. We all know that so many of our devotees eventually will head into family life. Especially the ladies. In Krishna conscious culture, we have to balance two wishes. Every woman is married and every man is a brahmachari. That's still a problem. So we have to balance these two realities. Every woman should have a nice husband and every man should stay a brahmachari. Something we've got to give. So, yes. It's a rare woman who can make it without marriage. And at least 50%, if not more, of men require marriage experience. How to prepare devotees for that so they don't enter into the whole marriage experience like it's a rose garden. Ah, it'll be pure romance, Krishna conscious romance. Because we're devotees, every day will just be like a symphony. Householders have told me that the greatest impediment to Krishna conscious marriages is all the false expectations. Like, this is going to solve everything. She's going to be Devahuti, I'm going to be Kardama Muni. We're just going to look at each other and talk about Krishna all day. Sometimes it happens like that. But there's also things like who's paying the mortgage? Who's paying the rent? Who's fixing the car? Who's taking the kids to school? So how do we prepare devotees who are going into that ashram so they can withstand the ups and downs? I'm for the honesty and reality approach. I just tell devotees, this is my own approach, I say, I can't predict what your future is going to be. I can't tell you you're going to marry someone and live happily ever after. Because these are such unstable times in the world, that instability affects devotees. So, you may marry someone who's a wonderful devotee, you may not. You may marry someone who's a wonderful devotee and later their devotional spirit cools. Or you may marry someone who's a wonderful devotee and your devotional spirit cools. Or both of your devotional spirits cool. First one is up and then the other is up. One is down and the other is down. They both are up and they both are down. How to be prepared for any circumstance. This is what I try to give each devotee a chance for developing. The ability to be Krishna conscious on your own two feet in any circumstance. You have to be practical about the times. The women are always wondering, where are the Arjunas, where are the Yudhisthiras? I don't know. And then if some men decide to marry, they think automatically they're going to get a Kunti or a Draupadi, a Devahuti. She'll do whatever I say. I snap my fingers and opulent prasad will appear on the table. As soon as my pile of laundry is there, it'll be washed and laundered and ironed immediately. All these false expectations make Grihastha Ashram very difficult. So I found that the best way is to teach each devotee, whether male or female, how to stand on his or her own two feet so that you can survive any situation. If you develop attachment for the holy name, attachment for reading Srila Prabhupada's books, serving devotees, sacrificing for the mission of Lord Chaitanya, then you can take anything that Maya can throw at you. And yes, in this dense darkness of Kali Yuga, Maya throws things at you. You have to learn how to handle that. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Krishna.